Today, all change in Downing Street. But what will the end of Vote Leave's dominance mean for Boris Johnson's premiership? It's arguably not the best time for a psychodrama to engulf Downing Street and Boris Johnson. COVID-19 deaths have crossed 50,000. The Brexit deadline is looming large. The Prime Minister has infuriated Scottish voters with leaked comments about devolution being a disaster. And he's even been pinged by Track and Trace.
Hi, folks. The good news is that NHS Test and Trace is working ever more efficiently. The bad news is that they pinged me and I've got to self-isolate because somebody I was in contact with a few days ago has developed COVID. And
so it is from isolation in Downing Street that Johnson is having to manage the power struggle that has played out among his staff, resulting in the appointment of a new press secretary, Allegra Stratton, and in the departure of the two men who had been the Prime Minister's closest aides, the Vote Leave duo, Dominic Cummings and Lee Kane. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, what does the turmoil inside Number 10 mean for Britain? Katie Balls, you're the deputy political editor of The Spectator and a regular contributor to The Guardian. When Boris Johnson ran to be leader of the Conservative Party, I would say the tone was one of consensus.
Would that make you come back and vote Conservative again?
Yes.
That's the spirit. Yes. But we've got to have the courage to tell the people of this country that we can do it.
He was trying to build bridges, trying to be a one-nation Tory who would appeal to Remainers as well as Leavers. And then he won.
Well, we did it! We did it! We pulled it off, didn't we?
And he brought into the heart of Downing Street quite a controversial figure and the architect of Vote Leave, Dominic Cummings.
The arrival of Dominic Cummings in Number 10 has been greeted by many as big news. But
and that surprised people. Why did he do that?
Boris Johnson brought Dominic Cummings in. I think the large motivation there was that he knew he had to deliver Brexit. If you look at what he had inherited from Theresa May, there was a sense that the only way you were going to be able to do that was probably through guerrilla tactics, for thinking outside the box and, you know, being nicey-nice or even perhaps very conciliatory wasn't going to get that done. And therefore, it quite quickly became Downing Street, where Dominic Cummings was by some seen to be the most important person, perhaps by some even more important than Boris Johnson.
And obviously, many people will know the name Dominic Cummings. Lee Kane is less well known. How did he rise so dramatically through the ranks to become Downing Street Director of Communications?
Yes, so Lee Kane worked on the EU referendum Vote Leave campaign. And I think it's fair to say that he wasn't one of the biggest names on that campaign, but he made a good impression. And when Boris Johnson moved to the Foreign Office under Theresa May, he joined him as his special advisor. I think they got on, but I think where they actually really bonded was when Boris Johnson quit that role over Brexit and went to the backbenches. Lee Kane stuck with him. Now, lots of people think they are odd pairing. One is an old Etonian classicist, the other is a state school Scouser. But they spent a lot of time in quite a poxy little office in Parliament, which the whips had given them. And I think you can't underestimate how that time can form a bond, because all of a sudden, all the grandeur, all these top teams of age, you know, it all goes and it's just you and your minister or former minister, so to speak, in a room together. From then on, he stuck with him. He helped him through the leadership contest. The leadership contest was clearly a success. I think some thought that Lee Kane was a bit too young for it. They questioned if he had enough experience. But in the end, he did get that top job. And although he isn't someone you would hear so much about, and I think the only few photographs and larger when he's stood next to Dominic Cummings, he has had a really big impact on Downing Street and also just the media strategy.
I was just laughing to think about how far Lee Kane has come from the days when he worked for the Daily Mirror and dressed up as a chicken, chasing politicians around. Once he was in Downing Street and once Cummings was in there, essentially this Vote Leave campaign team running the country, how did they operate?
Lots of people thought Boris Johnson's government has premiership, a bit like a court. I think I even wrote that and it proved not to hold true. The idea being you'd have various factions competing for Boris Johnson's ear. But I think as soon as he brought Dominic Cummings in, it was clear that wasn't going to be the case because Dominic Cummings wanted, as a condition of accepting the role, total control. And therefore, you suddenly had a top-heavy Vote Leave system. There was a big effort to centralise power. So you had a situation where Dominic Cummings, I think you could say, was at the top of the food chain. I think cabinet ministers were seen as pretty irrelevant, and I think MPs even more so.
That dominance of Vote Leave in Downing Street was turbocharged on December the 12th, 2019. I remember watching the jubilation on Boris Johnson's face in the early hours of Friday morning as it sank in that he had just won the biggest Tory majority since the 1980s.
With this mandate and this majority, we will at last be able to do what? We've been paying attention.
And there around him were the people he gave credit to, not just Cummings and Kane, but other significant Vote Leave advisers. That is less than a year ago, although you can hardly believe it because so much has changed. The government has since been rocked by the COVID-19 crisis.
The latest comprehensive analysis of deaths during the pandemic reveals that the UK, and England especially, have suffered more deaths than similar countries.
It has officially stumbled into a series of U-turns.
A huge policy reversal.
The Labour leader accused the Prime Minister
forced the U-turn,
having presided over a string of U-turns.
Another U-turn.
A summer of chaos.
That have angered those same Tory backbenchers who felt sidelined, and some of whom have hated the way the lockdown policies have been brought in.
It is, I believe now, madness to continue subjecting the people to what now amounts to arbitrary power without scrutiny. Kids can go to school, but not to a party afterwards. You know, eat out to help out, but don't meet in more than six. There's a rule that you can go to church, provided you don't go to church in a group of more than six.
Plus, Labour has pulled ahead in the polls and Boris Johnson's approval ratings have plummeted. But perhaps the thing that hit them most of all was the scandal surrounding Dominic Cummings himself and his trip to the northeast in the middle of lockdown.
Whatever details he offered today about his movements during the lockdown, it failed to quell the criticism. His account of a trip to Barnard Castle, 30 miles from Durham, was challenged by one government adviser.
Does that still resonate?
Even today, if you speak to MPs, Tory MPs in the Red Wall, some of them have these kind of, you know, these diagrams that, which tell you the words that come up most in constituent emails. And to this day, you know, Dominic Cummings, Barnard Castle, Durham are the biggest words. So it had this big impact. And I think it just meant that you're losing a lot of political capital and goodwill very fast. And there's a question of how sustainable that is.
OK, and all of that sets the scene for the latest showdown. Tell me what happened.
Yes, so if you look at the past week or so, we've had rows with lots of people that members of the public will never have heard of. But there is a general acceptance that Downing Street and the government has not been functioning as it should be. Where they all disagree is on what fixes that. So after discussions between Boris Johnson and Lee Kane about the future of this government, Lee Kane was, we hear, offered the job of Chief of Staff. Now, to set the backdrop on this very briefly, there was a disagreement behind the scenes on how the government should present itself in the coming months and years. And this links to the appointment of Legra Stratton as the new Prime Minister's spokesperson. I think that there has been a push amongst certain quarters of Downing Street, including the Prime Minister's partner, Carrie Symons, to say that once Brexit is delivered, once you hopefully get through the worst of coronavirus, Boris Johnson has a chance to reset his premiership. And there are plenty who think that reset should see a change in tone, which is less combative, has more time for MPs, and ultimately doesn't pick fights for the sake of it. This is why when news broke in the Times that Lee Kane was being offered chief of staff, there was quite quickly a very large backlash, and it all played out publicly. And in the end, he resigned instead of, you know, just staying in Downing Street.
Right now, the plot centres on this man, Lee Kane, Boris Johnson's communications director, who has quit after his proposed appointment as the PM's chief of staff was met with resistance from MPs. And
that brought to the head tensions that had been building for several weeks. Dominic Cummings also chose to go,
leaving for the final time. One of the most influential figures in Westminster propelled out of the door after a power struggle that erupted publicly and left Downing Street in turmoil.
And I think in the days since, we've seen all this dirty laundry in Downing Street roll out, which is briefings against each other and the various factions. But I think a lot of it comes down to what type of government should Boris Johnson lead? And I think there are plenty of people who think the Vote Leave style of government is too disruptive. There are others who, I think, say that perhaps MPs and others should be careful what they wish for, because while Dominic Cummings and Lee Kane may not have a massive Tory fan club, they were good at getting the Prime Minister to make decisions, and that could be much worse now they are gone.
And Katie, how do we get to a position where Boris Johnson is prepared to lose Cummings over what appears to be a power struggle and a few hissy fits, but didn't force him out for breaking lockdown rules in what was probably the biggest political scandal of the year, and as you've been hearing, is an issue that really still sticks with Conservative MPs across the North and Midlands? Surely he spent all that political capital on Cummings because he felt he needed him.
Yes, and I think lots of ministers are asking that question. I think there are plenty of politicians who feel they damaged their own credibility by coming out to defend Dominic Cummings over that trip because the Prime Minister insisted that Dominic Cummings had to stay, yet now it turns out he is dispensable after all. I think it marks how things have changed in actually quite quickly in a few months. I also think that while Dominic Cummings had the Prime Minister's backing through that incident, it did damage his standing to a degree. You hear that Boris Johnson would often bring Barnard Castle up in meetings. Even if it was jokey, there was a sense that, you know, it was clearly on his mind. And I think that if you look at, I suppose, why does he go now? Well, Brexit, in terms of, you know, reaching the end of the talks, it is nearly done. But I also think that what Boris Johnson wanted Dominic Cummings for was someone who could read the mood of the public and see problems ahead and make decisions and keep things on the road. I think that in recent months, the role Dominic Cummings has filled has been more on his, you know, special projects and less, you know, the daily running of everything. And I think that that meant that Boris Johnson felt that he needed a chief of staff as well, something to get the smooth running of government. Now, Dominic Cummings would not be happy with a chief of staff that he had to answer to. And I think that given that Dominic Cummings did not necessarily want to take on that level of bandwidth himself, it pushed Boris Johnson into a place where he felt that he did need to refresh things. And I think a key part of that is the fact that he had more advisers, I think such as his partner, but also Allegra Stratton and others, making the case to him that there is another way for his premiership and he has time to do that.
Let's talk about the other side of the fence. You've mentioned Carrie Symons, and I think it's important to say that she was head of press for the Conservative Party for some time. But the key appointment here is the new press secretary, Allegra Stratton, someone we know. She's been a political reporter at The Guardian, as well as at the BBC and most recently ITV. Some briefing against her are trying to paint her as a liberal who won't get red wall voters. But given her journalistic work, I have to say I find that pretty patronising.
Well, I think we saw over recent days a big effort to look at both Carrie Symons and Allegra Stratton and say, look at the schools they went to, look at where they're from, they clearly don't represent this area. As you suggest, I think this is a really simplistic way of putting it. And if you look at Allegra Stratton's work, particularly in her role at ITV, going to a lot of these areas and covering them in depth, they clearly have knowledge of it. And I think probably the bigger question is, what exactly they're going to do to strengthen that agenda. And I think at the moment it's unclear because you have this space, because ultimately what's happened in the past, you know, week or so has happened quicker than even those who wanted it to happen anticipated it would. So you have a situation where, you know, figures are gone who some people wanted out, but we don't have a whole new team to replace them. We don't know who the new chief of staff is. And that creates a vacuum where it means that, you know, even what people think are helpful, positive briefings. So you saw in the Times this idea of a focus on the environment, you know, women's issues and so forth, can actually be quite unhelpful.
And I know we can expect a change of tone, both in terms of how Downing Street interacts with MPs, but also the media. What will that look like?
On Monday, we saw early signs of what this shift might mean, which is this idea of boycotts, which we saw heavily under the Vote Leave team, is coming to an end. You had Matt Hancock on Good Morning Britain with Piers Morgan.
What's been for the last 201 days?
A show where ministers have rarely been seen due to, you know, a long-standing feud.
Do you think it's right and proper that in the biggest health crisis this country's faced for 100 years, that you as Health Secretary and the entire Cabinet and the Prime Minister have boycotted a big morning breakfast television programme and our viewers for 6 months? Do you support the boycott? Did you agree with it?
Well, I'm here to answer all of the questions that you might have on behalf of your viewers.
I just asked you one.
I think we're also going to see signs of it in terms of how he communicates with Tory MPs. I think that the view of Stratton and others is that there is a way to communicate their message more widely, keeping the message fairly similar in terms of who the core voters are, but to a wider audience. I think the question coming from the other side, you know, is it a change in tone? Because various briefings, and I don't think this is exclusive to that person, but more widely talk about, you know, a change on culture wars you know, things beyond the environment. And I think that's what we have to see in the weeks to come if there is a wider shift going on. I think it's probably worth pointing out that, you know, Boris Johnson himself would describe himself as a liberal conservative. I remember interviewing him during the Tory leadership when I chaired the One Nation group hustings, and he was at pains to say that he was a One Nation Tory. So even if the Tory party is pivoting more or, you know, going to shout more loudly about One Nation conservatism, it's a part of Boris Johnson he has in him. It's just also the case that he has a Vote Leave part of him, and I think it might be a question of which side of him that he wants to show more in the coming months and years. Whether or not Red Wall voters are still the focus, which everyone is very keen to say they are, I think we are heading from a more combative conservatism to a more cuddly conservatism.
Now that this new team is in place, Stratton is going to be doing these US-style briefings that, ironically, Lee Kane came up with in the first place. How do you think that will change the way that this government communicates?
I think the briefing is going to be really interesting. Clearly, the briefings, I think, in a way, were a trigger to this whole row blowing up when it did. Tensions had been building, but it was the appointment of the press spokesperson, the Prime Minister's spokesperson, I think, that definitely brought things to a head. Now, we know the studio is being built. We expect them to start from January. The idea, as imagined by Lee Kane, was it's a way to have a more direct audience with voters, probably less dependent on print media and so forth. But they're also high risk in the sense that I think it is a way for the Prime Minister to communicate his message. But on days where there is little to say, on tricky days, if you think about, you know, free school meals, are these going to backfire? Now, I think there are plenty of figures in government who would say, well, actually, it's going to be a much more improved operation now. But I think anyone who's been following governments even lightly over the past few years will know that, you know, even the best intended government, the best intentioned government, all the best run is going to have bad days. And I think that we've got to see, when you take that all into account, are the press briefings going to, you know, reconnect Boris Johnson with his core voters, or are they going to create more problems to throw at him?
There are a couple of really big policy areas that this new team is going to have to deal with. We know that Dominic Cummings was pretty hardline on Brexit. He was willing to flirt with no deal. Does this change mean that we could see a difference in the way the government handles the talks, which are now, of course, at a crunch point?
So I don't think this was at all a factor in what happened, but I think it highlights why it's such bad timing for Boris Johnson that, you know, you had all the dirty laundry of Downing Street come out on a week where you had, you know, the death toll past 50,000, Brexit talks nearing the end. Because I think on Brexit, the departure of senior Vote Leave aides means that you can see a situation where people can try and say this deal is not hard Brexit enough. I think the fact that Nigel Farage last Friday shared a photo online of Dominic Cummings leaving 10 Downing Street with, you know, a cardboard box of his belongings and said to him, it smells like, you know, a stitch up on Brexit, shows you what Boris Johnson could be up against.
The clock is running down to the end of Brexit negotiations, and yet the girls and boys in Westminster are all busy playing games, all trying to stab each other in the back. Who are the winners? Well, tough to work out.
But there's a strong insistence from the government side that it changes nothing. I think a lot of people are very intrigued by the fact David Frost, his chief negotiator, who we know isn't happy about how things played out over the last week, has done a Twitter thread, you know, saying that he personally will not change the line on Brexit, will not soften. I think shows that there are figures who are really going to fight. So I'm not sure that it will affect the Brexit talks, but I do think it could affect how they are perceived, whatever the outcome.
And was any of this driven in part by the Joe Biden victory, which of course does change things for us in terms of Brexit? It means that America is going to be more fussy about the type of Brexit deal that we get, and also perhaps less willing to engage in the idea of a US trade deal.
Yeah, I think all these things do have an impact. And I think, you know, speaking to ministers ahead of that result, they say, you know, Boris Johnson's psyche, whether or not he admits it, is going to be influenced by who wins. I think in terms of Brexit, it's clearly the case that a no-deal Brexit is much harder under Joe Biden than Donald Trump. Donald Trump would have brought his own problems, I think, for the UK government on Brexit. But it does push Boris Johnson's towards that. And one point that has been made to me by Tory MPs is, would the Prime Minister really pursue a no-deal Brexit if that meant in the new year, when lots of the repercussions of that would become clear, he wouldn't have some of his closest Vote Leave allies by his side?
And what about COVID-19? What changes can we expect there?
I think on coronavirus, the general hope in terms of this government reset is that we can start to see a place where living with coronavirus is going to become easier. The Prime Minister has long spoken about the spring as a time when, you know, science is going to come to our rescue. I think the news of successful vaccines, mass testing, which Dominic Cummings has done a lot of work on, could lead to that. I think in terms of decision making, I'm not yet clear that this is going to have a significant impact. I think that if you look at the cabinet, they're still pretty divided on the way to go. But if you think back to that second lockdown leak, clearly we've got to a point where there's lots of mistrust and disagreement in government. I personally don't think the departure of Dominic Cummings and Lee Kane is about to put an end to that. There's still plenty of differing opinions about the course the UK should chart.
And let me ask you about the cabinet, because that's his other key team. And it has been argued that there were a fair few middle-ranking ministers who were perhaps described as yes men in there, while a lot of talented MPs remain on the backbenches. Can we expect a shake-up?
Yes, I think we can expect a shake-up. There will be a reshuffle coming. I think there's a question if it's at the very end of the year or the start of next year. But ultimately, I think that lots of the people celebrating the news of the Vote Leave departure think this has to be a wider reset. It's not just enough to lose a couple of aides. There needs to be a change in the way you work for the parliamentary party. And I think there's a push for, you know, some figures to come back. Sajid Javid keeps coming up as a name, the former chancellor. He left, you know, in the aftermath of the dispute with Dominic Cummings as a way of showing, you know, the party is changing. I think, however, any reshuffle is very risky. And, you know, lots of people say, oh, easy to blame Lee's advisors who've just left, you know, for all the problems. But the problem is, ultimately, Boris Johnson struggles to make decisions, something he would obviously deny. And secondly, he hates upsetting people. He doesn't like firing people. So I think that's the counter to how drastic it's going to be. How many people is he really going to want to kick out from those senior positions? But I think there will be substantive change. Lots of his allies think that the current setup isn't working. One very close ally where Boris Johnson said to me that he needs a new chairman, a new chief whip, new PPSs. Those are pretty large parts of any government. So I think we are going to start to see a bit of a new look government. And the question is, are, as you say, we heading to a situation where we have more independent-minded cabinet ministers and that's celebrated? Or is, as can sometimes be the case, people talk about relaxing things, you know, taking power away from Downing Street, but actually in practice don't do it too much.
Coming up, what does this change of personnel in Downing Street tell us about the Prime Minister himself? Katie, you've talked about the idea that there are two quite different sides of Boris Johnson and that we're all kind of waiting to see which one might come forward. And some people link those two sides of him to two discrete periods of his political life. One is London Mayor, when he was seen as more of a uniting figure, popular with Labour supporters in London, quite internationalist. And the other, as the Brexit figurehead, who has had huge success in elections, but has become more divisive. Is that a fair prism to look at this through? And if so, how do you think he will change?
Yeah, I think that is a fair way. Obviously, all these things tend to be a little bit more complicated, but I do think that if you think about, you know, figures like Stratton, other figures, you know, who might come in, his partner, I think there is a sense that, you know, Boris Johnson wasn't always this divisive, and perhaps you can change things. You can widen his reach. I think that ultimately the question is, are, I suppose, swing voters who are opposed to Brexit, who don't like some of Boris Johnson's comments, such, you know, the Telegraph piece on burkas, are they going to forget those things and be able to move over? Because the counter is, well, Boris Johnson's going up against Keir Starmer, these people are more likely to go with him. Or is it the case that they should lean in and, you know, go for this more cultural line? Which, to be fair, I don't think Lee Kane was ever really particularly strongly pushing, but there's definitely a group of Tory MPs, and quite of whom, you know, represent seats in the Red Wall, who would like that to be more the tone. And I think that Boris Johnson, and again, I mean, I've always remembered that someone in Downing Street described him to me like a weather vane, the idea that, you know, he constantly changes his position. There's a sense that, you know, often to know what he thinks, you just speak to the person he last spoke to. But initial signs suggest that he wants to return to this kind of one nation, liberal conservative, more conciliatory approach. We just have to see how committed he is to it and whether or not it sticks.
But for all of that, at least one readout of Boris Johnson's final meeting with Cummings and Kane referred to the idea of getting the gang back together for 2024. Have bridges been maintained? And if so, will he swing back to what he sees as his winning campaigning formula and the Vote Leave team when we get to the next election?
I think things have got pretty messy. If you pick up any newspaper in the past, you know, week or so, you'll be able to see that in terms of briefings and counter briefings. But ultimately, in terms of who Boris Johnson will lean on in the future, I think Boris Johnson has shown time and time again that ultimately he's a pretty ruthless politician. He will adapt as he needs to survive. And therefore, I don't think you can rule him bringing anyone back if that's what he thinks is what he needs to stay in power.
Katie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was The Spectator's Katie Balls, who you can also find at theguardian.com in the opinion section. Speaking of a shift in policy and tone, the Prime Minister is due to make a speech this week on the environment. I'm not sure if he's going to do it remotely from Downing Street, but he was planning to talk about his ideas for a green industrial revolution. It was in the diary, so I'm not sure it's entirely linked to the change in Downing Street, but do follow the news on Andrew Sparrow's Political Live blog and with our Westminster team. You can also listen to The Guardian's deputy political editor, Jessica Elgott, on the Politics Weekly podcast today. She's speaking to two former special advisers about what it feels like when everything falls apart for your boss. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Maithili Rao. Sound design was by Nicholas Cox. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.